In the beginning was Arnold Brothers Est 1905, the great department store. It was the home of several thousand gnomes, as they called themselves, who'd long ago given up life in the countryside and settled down under the floorboards of mankind. Not that they had anything to do with humans. Humans were big and slow and stupid. Gnomes live fast. To them, 10 years is like a century. Since they'd been living in the store for more than 80 years, they'd long ago forgotten that there were things like sun and rain and wind. And then, into the store from an outside the gnomes didn't believe existed, came Masklin and his little tribe. They knew what rain and wind were, all right. That's why they'd tried to get away from them. With them, they brought the Thing. For years they'd thought of the Thing as a sort of talisman or lucky charm. Only in the store, near electricity, did it wake up and tell a few selected gnomes things they hardly understood. They learnt that they'd originally come from the stars in some sort of ship, and that somewhere up in the sky that ship had been waiting for thousands of years to take them home. And they learnt that the store was going to be demolished in 3 weeks. How Masklin tricked, bullied and persuaded the gnomes into leaving the store by stealing one of its huge trucks is recounted in Truckers. They made it to an old quarry, and for a little while things went well enough. But when you're 4 inches high in a world full of giant people, things never go very well for very long. They found that humans were going to reopen the quarry. At the same time, they also found a scrap of newspaper which had a picture of Richard Arnold, grandson of one of the brothers who founded Arnold Brothers. The company that owned the store was now a big international concern, and Richard Arnold 39, said the newspaper, was going to Florida to watch the launch of its first communications satellite. The Thing admitted to Masklin that if it could get into space, it could call the ship. He decided to take a few gnomes and go to the airport and find some way of getting to Florida to get the Thing into the sky. Which, of course, was ridiculous, as well as impossible. But he didn't know this, so he and his companions set out. The gnomes that stayed behind fought the humans in diggers. They defended their quarry as long as they could and fled on Jacob, the great yellow digging machine. But this is Masklin's story. Masklin slid cautiously down an old burger carton in a bin full of rubbish. He'd been watching humans, hundreds and hundreds of humans. It was beginning to dawn on him that getting on a jet plane wasn't like stealing a truck. Angelo and Gerda had nestled deep into the rubbish and were gloomily eating the remains of a cold, greasy chip. This has come as a shock to all of us, Masklin thought. I mean, take Gerda. Back in the store, he was the abbot. He believed that Arnold Brothers made the store for gnomes, and he still thinks there's some sort of Arnold Brothers somewhere watching over us because we are important. And now we're out here, and all we've found is that gnomes aren't important at all. And there's Angelo. He doesn't believe in Arnold Brothers, but he likes to think Arnold Brothers exists just so that he can go on not believing in him. And there's me. I never thought it would be this hard. I thought jet planes were just trucks with more wings and less wheels. Masklin looked at the Thing. He knew it was listening, even though it was just a small black cube. It somehow always looked more alert when it was listening. The trouble was, it only spoke when it felt like it. It'd always give you just enough help and no more. It seemed to be testing him the whole time. Thing, he said, I know you can hear me, because there must be loads of electricity in this building. We're at the airport. We can't find grandson Richard 39. We don't know how to start looking. Please help us. The Thing stayed silent. If you don't help us, said Masklin quietly, we'll go back to the quarry and face the humans, but that won't matter to you because we'll leave you here. We really will. And no gnomes will ever find you again. There will never be another chance. We'll die out. There will be no more gnomes anywhere, and it will be because of you. And in years and years to come, you'll be all alone and useless, and you'll think, perhaps I should have helped Maskelyne when he asked me. It's a machine, snapped Angelo. You can't blackmail a machine. One small red light lit up on the thing's black surface. A second light came on, very faintly. Maskelyne stood up and nodded to the others. All right, he said. Let's go. The thing made the little electronic noise which was the machine's equivalent of a gnome clearing his throat.
How can I be of assistance?
It said. Maskelyne sat down again. Find grandson Richard Arnold 39, he said.
This will take a long time, said the thing.
Ah. Oh. A few lights moved on the thing's surface. Then it said,
I have located a Richard Arnold, aged 39. He has just gone into the first-class departure lounge for flight 205 to Miami, Florida.
That didn't take a very long time, said Maskelyne.
It was 300 microseconds. That's long.
I don't think I understood all of it either, Maskelyne added.
Which parts didn't you understand?
Nearly all of them, said Maskelyne. All the bits after gone into.
Someone with the right name is here and waiting in a special room to get on a big silver bird that flies in the sky to go to a place called Florida, said the thing.
How does it know all this stuff? Said Angelo suspiciously.
This building is full of computers, said the thing.
What? Like you? The thing managed to look offended.
They are very, very primitive, it said, but I can understand them if I think slowly enough. Their job is to know where humans are going.
That's more than most humans do, said Angelo.
Can you find out how we can get to him, said Gerda, his face alight.
Hold on, hold on, said Angelo quickly. Let's not rush into things here.
We came here to find him, didn't we, said Gerda.
Gerda prodded Angelo with an accusing finger.
You're frightened, aren't you? He said.
You're frightened that if we see grandson Richard, it'll mean there really is an Arnold Brothers and you'll have been wrong. I'm frightened about you, said Angelo, because you'll see that grandson Richard is just a human. Arnold Brothers was just a human too. Or two humans. They just built the store for humans. They didn't even know about gnomes. The thing opened a small hatch on its top. It did that sometimes. When the hatches were shut, you couldn't see where they were. But whenever the thing was really interested in something, it opened up and extended a small silver dish on a pole or a complicated arrangement of pipes. This time, it was a piece of wire mesh on a metal rod. It started to turn, slowly. Maskelyne picked up the box. While the other two argued, he said quietly, "Do you know where this lounge thing is?"
Yes,
said the thing. Let's go then. Gnomes live 10 times faster than humans. They're harder to see than a high-speed mouse. That's one reason why most humans hardly ever see them. The other is that humans are very good at not seeing things they know aren't there. And since sensible humans know that there are no such things as people 4 inches high, a gnome who doesn't want to be seen probably won't be seen. So no one noticed 3 tiny blurs darting across the floor of the airport building. They dodged the rumbling wheels of luggage trolleys. They shot between the legs of slow-moving humans. They skidded around chairs. They became nearly invisible as they crossed a huge, echoing corridor. And they disappeared behind a potted plant. In a tree 9,000 miles away from Maskelyne, high on a cloudy mountainside, was a plant that looked like one large flower. It grew wedged in a fork of the trees, its roots dangling in the air to trap what nourishment they could from the mists. Technically, it was an epiphytic bromeliad. Water condensed into a tiny pool in the centre of the bloom. And there were the frogs. Very, very small frogs. They had such a tiny life cycle, it still had trainer wheels on it. They hunted insects among the petals. They laid their eggs in the central pool. Tadpoles grew up and became more frogs and made more tadpoles. Eventually, they died and sank down and joined the compost at the base of the leaves, which in fact helped nourish the plant.
And this had been the way things were for as far back as the frogs could remember. About 3 seconds. Except that on this day, while it hunted for flies, one frog lost its way and crawled around the side of one of the outermost petals, or possibly leaves, and saw something it had never seen before. It saw the universe. More precisely, it saw the branch stretching away into the mists, and several yards away, glistening with droplets of moisture in a solitary shaft of sunlight, was another flower. The frog sat and stared. Gerda leant against the wall and panted like a hot dog on a sunny day. Angelo was almost as badly out of breath, but was going red in the face, trying not to show it. "Why aren't you puffed out?" said Angelo. "I'm used to running fast," said Masklin, peering around the plant. "Okay, thing. Now what?" "Along this corridor," said the thing. "It's full of humans," squeaked Gerda. "Everywhere's full of humans. That's why we're doing this," said Masklin. He paused, and then added, "Look, thing, isn't there any other way we can go? Gerda nearly got squashed just now." Coloured lights moved in complicated patterns across the thing. Then it said, "What is it you want to achieve?"
"We must find grandson Richard 39, panted Gerda.
"No, going to the Florida place is the important thing, said Masklin.
"It isn't, said Gerda. I don't want to go to any Florida.
Masklin hesitated. Then he said, "This probably isn't the right time to say this, but I haven't been totally honest with you." He told them about the thing and space and the ship in the sky. Around them, there was the endless thundering noise of a building full of busy humans. Eventually, Gerda said, "You're not trying to find grandson Richard at all?"
"I think he's probably very important," said Masklin hurriedly, "but you're right. At Florida, there's a place where they have sort of jet planes that go straight up to put kind of bleeping radio things in the sky."
"Oh, come on," said Angelo. "You can't just put things in the sky. They'd fall down."
"I don't really understand it myself," Masklin admitted. "But if you go up high enough, there is no down, I think.
Anyway, all we have to do is to go to Florida and put the thing on one of these going up jets, and it can do the rest, it says."
"All?" said Angelo.
"It can't be harder than stealing a truck," said Masklin.
"You're not suggesting we steal a plane," said Gerda, by this time totally horrified.
"No one said anything about stealing a plane," said Masklin quickly. "We aren't going to steal a plane. We're just going for a ride on one, I hope."
"Wow.
And we're not going to try to drive it, Angelo." Masklin tapped the thing.
"Do you know where the jet plane is that's going to Florida?"
"Yes."
"Lead us there, then, avoiding too many humans if you can."
It was raining softly, and because it was early evening, lights were coming on around the airport. Absolutely no one heard the faint tinkle as a little ventilation grill dropped off an outside wall. 3 blurred shapes lowered themselves down onto the concrete and sped away towards the planes. Angelo looked up, and up some more, and there was still more up to come. He ended up with his head craned right back.
"Oh, wow," he kept saying.
"It's too big," muttered Gerda, trying not to look. It loomed over them, so big that you had to keep on stepping back and back to see how big it was. Rain glistened on it. The airport lights made smears of green and white bloom on its flanks. It wasn't a thing. It was a bit of shaped sky.
"Of course, they look smaller when they're a long way off," Masklin muttered. He stared up at the plane. He'd never felt smaller in his life.
"How do we get on it, then?" said Gerda. "There's the holes where the wheels stick through," said Masklin. "I think we could climb up there."
"No," said the thing, which was tucked under his arm. "You would not be able to breathe. You must be properly inside."
Masklin waded through the puddles on the concrete so that he could see down the far side of the aircraft. Some way away, a couple of humans were using some sort of machines to load boxes into a hole in the side of the plane. He walked back around the huge tyres, and squinted up at a long, high tube that stretched from the building. He pointed. "I think that's how humans are loaded onto it," he said. "What? Through a pipe, like water?" said Angelo. "There's stairs and wires and things," said Maskelyne. "It shouldn't be too difficult to climb up there. There's bound to be a gap we can slip in by." He sniffed. "There always is," he added, "when humans build things."
"Let's do it," said Angelo. "Oh, wow!"
"But you're not to try to steal it," said Maskelyne, as they helped the slightly plump Gerda lumber into a run. "And you're not to try to drive it. I expect it's a lot more complicated than a truck. It's a... do you know what it's called thing?"
"A Concorde."
"There," said Maskelyne. "It's a Concorde. Whatever that is." Squeezing through a gap in the human walking onto the plane's pipe wasn't as hard as coming to terms with what was on the other side. The floors of the shed in the quarry had been bare boards or stamped earth. In the airport building, it was squares of a sort of shiny stone. But here, Gerda flung himself face down and buried his nose in it.
"Carpet," he said almost in tears. "Carpet, I never thought I'd see you again."
"Oh, get up," said Angelo.
Gerda stood up awkwardly.
"Sorry," he mumbled, brushing himself off. "Don't know what possessed me there. It just took me back, that's all. Real carpet. Haven't seen real carpet for months."
He blew his nose noisily.
"We had some beautiful carpets in the store, you know."
Maskelyne looked up the pipe. It was like one of the store's corridors and quite brightly lit. "Let's move on," he said. "It's too exposed here. Where are all the humans, thing?"
"They will be arriving shortly."
"How does it know?" Gerda complained. "It listens to other machines," said Maskelyne.
"There are also many computers on this plane," said the thing.
A few feet away, the corridor opened into a new space. Maskelyne could see a curtain and what looked like the edge of a chair. "All right, Angelo," he said. "Lead the way. I know you want to." 2 minutes later, the three of them were sitting under a seat. It had been too much for Gerda. He was in tears.
"Electric lights," he moaned, "and more carpets and big soft seats. And, oh, they've even got napkins on, and there isn't any mud anywhere."
"There, there," said Angelo, helplessly patting him on the shoulder. "It was a good store, I know." He looked at Maskelyne. "We shouldn't stay here," said Maskelyne. "There'll be humans all over the place pretty soon. Remember what the thing said?" They helped Gerda up and trotted under the rows of seats with him between them. They could already hear distant sounds. In the end, they found a gap behind a curtain in a part of the aircraft where there were no seats. Maskelyne crawled inside, pushing the thing in front of him. There weren't distant sounds now. They were very close. He turned his head and saw a human foot a few inches away. At the back of the gap, there was a hole in the metal wall where some thick wires passed through. It was just big enough for Angelo and Maskelyne, and big enough for a terrified Gerda with the two of them pulling on his arms. There, on the other side, they lay packed together in the gloom, trying to make themselves comfortable on the wires. There were noises all around them. From somewhere far below came a series of metallic clonks. There was the mournful sound of human voices, and then a jolt.
"Thing,"
Maskelyne whispered.
"Yes."
"What's happening?"
"The plane is getting ready to become airborne."
"Oh." Maskelyne settled himself as best he could between the metal wall and a heavy bundle of wires and stared into the darkness. The gnomes didn't speak. After a while, there was a faint jerk and a sensation of movement. Nothing else happened. It went on not happening. Eventually, Gerda said,
"Is it too late to get off if we..."
A sudden distant thundering noise finished the sentence for him. A dull rumbling shook everything around them, very gently but very firmly.
Then there was a heavy pause, like the moment a ball must feel between the time it's thrown up and the time it starts to come down, and something picked up all three of them and slid them into a struggling heap. The floor tried to become the wall. The gnomes hung on to one another, stared into one another's faces, and screamed. After a while, they stopped. There didn't seem much point in continuing. Besides, they were out of breath. The floor very gradually became a proper floor again. Masklin pushed Angelo's foot off his neck. "I think we're flying," he said. "Is that what it was?" said Angelo weakly. Gerda pulled himself upright. "Is there any food around?" "Maybe we won't need any," Masklin said. "How long will it take to get to Florida, thing?" "The captain has just said it will be 6 hours and 45 minutes, said the thing.
"We'll starve to death," said Gerda,
for it was about as long as 2.5 days to a gnome. At least it was warm and dry. Back in the days when he'd lived in a hole in a bank, Masklin had spent far too much time cold and wet to turn up his nose at a chance to sleep warm and dry. He dozed. Airborne. Airborne. Perhaps there were hundreds of gnomes who lived in the aeroplanes in the same way that gnomes had lived in the store. Perhaps they got on with their lives under the carpeted floor somewhere, while they were whisked to all the places Masklin had seen on the only map that gnomes had ever found. It had been in a pocket diary, and the names of the faraway places written on it were like magic. Africa, Australia, China, Equator, printed in Hong Kong, Iceland. Perhaps they'd never looked out of the windows. Perhaps they'd never know that they were moving at all. He wondered if this was what Grimmer had meant by all the stuff about the frogs in the flower. She'd read it in a book. You could live your whole life in some tiny place and think it was the whole world. The trouble was, he'd been angry. He hadn't wanted to listen. Well, he was out of the flower now, and no mistake. The frog had brought some other young frogs to its spot among the leaves at the edge of the world of the flower. They stared at the branch. There wasn't just one flower out there, there were dozens. Although the frogs weren't able to think like this because frogs can't count beyond one. They saw lots of ones. They stared at them. Staring is one of the few things frogs are good at. Thinking isn't. In fact, what they thought was,
"Meep, meep. Meep, meep. Meep, meep."
But what they felt was too big for one flower to contain. Carefully, slowly, not at all certain why, they plopped down onto the branch. There was a polite beeping from the thing.
"You may be interested to know," it said, "that we've broken the sound barrier."
Masklin turned wearily to the others.
"All right, own up. Who broke it?"
"Don't look at me," said Angelo. Masklin crawled to the edge of the hole and peered out. There were human feet out there. Female human feet, by the look of it. Masklin sniffed. "There's food somewhere."
"What kind?"
said Angelo.
"Never mind what kind," said Gerda, pushing him out of the way. "Whatever it is, I'm going to eat it. Get back,"
Masklin snapped, pushing the thing into Angelo's arms. "I'll go. Angelo, don't let him move." He darted out, ran for the curtain, and slid behind it. After a few seconds, he moved just enough to let one eye and a frowning eyebrow show. The room was some sort of food place. The human females were taking trays of food out of the wall. One of the females put the last tray on a trolley and wheeled it past Masklin. The wheels were almost as tall as he was. As it squeaked past, he darted out of his hiding place and leapt onto it, squeezing himself amongst the bottles. Rows and rows of shoes. Quite a few of them without feet in them because the humans had taken them off. Masklin looked up as the trolley inched forward. Rows and rows of legs, some in skirts, but most in trousers. Masklin looked up further. Rows and rows of bodies, topped with rows and rows of heads with faces at the front. Rows and rows of... Masklin crouched back among the bottles. Grandson Richard was watching him. It was the face in the newspaper. It had to be. There was the little beard and the smiling mouth with lots of teeth in it, and the hair that looked as though it had been carved rather than grown in the normal way. Grandson Richard, 39. The face stared at him for a moment and then looked away.
He can't have seen me, Masklin told himself. What will Gerda say when I tell him? He'll go mad, that's what.
I think I'll keep it to myself for a while. That might be an amazingly good idea. We've got enough to worry about as it is. 39. Either there have been 38 other grandson Richards, and I don't think that's what it means, or it's a newspaper human way of saying he's 39 years old.
He burrowed further into the things on the shelf. Mostly they were bottles, but there were a few bags containing knobbly things a bit smaller than Masklin's fist. He stabbed at the paper with his knife until he'd cut a hole big enough and pulled one of them out. It was a salted peanut. Well, it was a start.
A peanut, said Angelo. Between three? What do you suggest, said Masklin bitterly. Do you want to go to the giving-out food woman and say there's three small hungry people down here?
Angelo stared at him. You know, that could be worth a try, he said.
What? Well, if you were a human, would you expect to see gnomes on a plane? Said Angelo.
Of course I wouldn't. I bet you'd be amazed if you did see one, eh?
Are you suggesting we deliberately show ourselves to a human?
Gerda said suspiciously.
We've never done that, you know.
One of the giving-out food humans was pulling trays off a shelf when a movement made it look up. Something small and black was being lowered down right by its ear. It stuck tiny thumbs in small ears, wagged its fingers, and put out its tongue. said Gerda. The tray in the human's hands crashed onto the floor in front of it. It made a long-drawn-out noise which sounded like a high-pitched foghorn and backed away, raising its hands to its mouth. Finally, it turned very slowly, like a tree about to fall, and fled between the curtains. When it came back with another human being, the little figure had gone. So had most of the food.
I don't know when I last had smoked salmon, said Gerda happily.
Said Angelo.
You're not supposed to eat it like that, said Gerda severely. You're not supposed to shove it all in your mouth and then cut off whatever won't fit. Whatever will people think?
Masklin cut the lid off a container of milk. It was practically gnome-sized.
This is more like it, eh? Said Gerda.
Anyone want some of this? He prodded a dish vaguely, not sure of what was in it.
Stuff?
The others shook their heads. The dish contained something shiny and wobbly and pink with a cherry on it, and in some strange way it managed to look like something you wouldn't eat even after a week's starvation diet. Angelo stretched his arms and yawned.
Oh, wash would be nice, he said.
Didn't see any water, Masklin said. There's probably a sink or a lavatory somewhere, but I wouldn't know where to start looking.
Talking of lavatories, said Angelo.
Right down the other end of the pipe, please, said Gerda.
And keep away from any wiring, volunteered the thing.
Angelo nodded in a puzzled fashion and crawled away into the darkness. Gerda yawned and stretched his arms.
Won't the giving-out food humans look for us, he said.
I don't think so, said Masklin. Back when we used to live outside, before we found the store, I'm sure humans saw us sometimes. I don't think they really believe their eyes. Gerda reached into his robe and pulled out the picture of grandson Richard. Even in the dim light of the pipe, Masklin recognised it as the human in the seat.
Do you think he's here somewhere?
Said Gerda wistfully.
Could be. Could be, said Masklin, feeling wretched.
But look, Gerda, maybe Angelo goes a bit too far, but he could be right. Maybe grandson Richard is just another human being, you know. Probably humans did build the store just for humans. Your ancestors just moved in because, well, it was warm and dry and...
I'm not listening, you know, said Gerda. I'm not going to be told that we're just things like rats and mice. We're special.
The thing is quite definite about us coming from somewhere else, Gerda, said Masklin meekly.
The abbot folded up the picture. Maybe we did. Maybe we didn't, he said. That doesn't matter. Angelo thinks it matters if it's true. Don't see why. There's more than one kind of truth. Gerda shrugged. I might say you're just a lot of dust and juices and bones and hair, and that's true. And I might say you're something inside your head that goes away when you die. That's true, too. Ask the thing. Coloured lights flickered across the thing's surface. A lot of them went red. Thing, we... The thing made the little clicking noise that was its equivalent of clearing its throat.
A gnome has been seen in the pilot's cabin.
Listen, thing, we...
What? I repeat, a gnome has been seen in the pilot's cabin.
Maskelyne looked around wildly.
Angelo, that is an extreme probability, said the thing.
The sound of Maskelyne and Gerda's voices echoed up and down the pipe as they scrambled over the wires.
I thought he was taking too long.
You shouldn't have let him go off by himself. You know what he's like about driving things.
The gnomes squeezed their way through a narrow, cable-hung world under the floor. Maskelyne stopped. Where now, thing?
The message told the giving-out food people that a strange little creature was on the flight deck. That is where we are. There are many computers here.
They're talking to you, are they?
A little. They are like children. Mostly they listen, said the thing smugly. They are not very intelligent.
What are we going to do? Said Gerda.
We're going to... Maskelyne hesitated. The word rescue was looming up somewhere in the sentence ahead. It was a good dramatic word. He longed to say it. The trouble was that there was another simpler, nastier word a little further beyond. It was how. I don't think they're trying to hurt him, he said, hoping it was true. We ought to find a place where we can see what's happening.
You'd better let me lead then, said Gerda.
Why?
You might be very good in wide-open spaces, said the abbot, pushing past him, but in the store we knew all about getting around inside things.
He rubbed his hands together.
Right, he said, and then grabbed a cable and slid through a gap Maskelyne hadn't even noticed was there. He used to do this sort of thing when I was a boy. Let's try up here.
They crawled between two warm metal walls. There was daylight ahead. Maskelyne and Gerda lay down and pulled themselves forward. There was an odd-shaped room, not a lot bigger than the cab of the truck itself. Like the cab, it was really just a space where the human drivers fitted into the machinery. There was a lot of that. It covered the walls and ceiling, lights and switches, dials and levers. There were two humans kneeling on the floor. One of the giving-out food females was standing by them. There was a lot of mooing and growling going on.
Human talking, muttered Maskelyne. I wish we could understand it. Very well, said the thing. Stand by.
You can understand human noises?
Certainly. They're only gnome noises slowed down.
You never told us that before.
There are many billions of things I have not told you. Where would you like me to start?
You can start by telling me what they're saying now.
One of the humans has just said... It must have been a mouse or something. And the other one said, You show me a mouse wearing clothes and I'll admit it was a mouse. And the giving out food woman said, It was no mouse I saw. It blew a raspberry at me! Exclamation.
What's a raspberry?
The small red fruit of the plant Rubus ideus.
Maskelyne turned to Gerda.
Did you?
Me?
I just went... One of the kneeling down humans has just said, I looked round and there it was, staring out of the window.
That's Angelo, all right, said Gerda.
Now the other kneeling down human has said, Well, whatever it is, it's behind this panel and it can't go anywhere.
It's taking off a bit of the wall, said Maskelyne. Oh, no, it's reaching inside.
The human mooed.
The human said, It bit me. The little devil bit me, said the thing conversationally.
Yup, that's Angelo, said Gerda. His father was like that too, a fighter in a tight corner.
But they don't know what they've got, said Maskelyne urgently. They've seen him, but he ran away. They're arguing about it. They don't really believe in gnomes. If we can get him out before he's caught, they're bound to think it was a mouse or something. I suppose we could get round there inside the wall, said Gerda, but it'd take too long. Maskelyne looked desperately around the cabin. Besides the three people trying to catch Angelo, there were two humans up at the front. They must be the drivers, he thought. I'm right out of ideas, he said. Can you think of anything, Thing?
There is practically no limit to what I can think of.
I mean, is there anything you can do to help us rescue Angelo?
Yes.
A moment later, they heard the low clanging of alarms. Lights began to flash. The drivers shouted and leant forward and started doing things to switches. What's going on? Said Maskelyne.
It is possible that the humans are startled, that they are no longer flying this machine, said the Thing.
They're not? Who is then?
I am.
One of the frogs fell off the branch and disappeared quietly into the leafy canopy far below. Since very small light animals can fall a long way without being hurt, it's quite likely that it survived in the forest world under the tree and had the second most interesting experience any tree frog has ever had. The rest of them crawled onward. Maskelyne helped Gerda along another metal channel full of wires. Overhead, they could hear human feet and the growling of humans in trouble.
I don't think they're very happy about it, said Gerda.
But they haven't got time to look for something that was probably a mouse, said Maskelyne. He looked at the Thing under his arm. Are you really driving the Concorde?
Yes.
I thought to drive things you had to turn wheels and change gears and things.
That is all done by machines. The humans press buttons and turn wheels just to tell machines what to do.
So what are you doing then?
I'm being in charge.
Is that hard?
Not in itself. However, the humans keep trying to interfere.
I think we'd better find Angelo quickly then, said Gerda. Come on.
They inched their way along another cable tunnel.
We are flying at a height of 55,000 feet at 1,352 miles per hour, said the Thing.
When they didn't comment, it added,
That's very high and very fast.
The gnome squeezed through the gap between a couple of metal plates.
Faster than a bullet, in fact.
Amazing, said Maskelyne.
Twice the speed of sound in this atmosphere.
Wow.
I wonder if I can put it another way, said the Thing,
and it managed to sound slightly annoyed.
It could get from the store to the quarry in under 15 seconds.
Good job we didn't meet it coming the other way, then, said Maskelyne.
Oh, stop teasing it, said Gerda. It wants you to tell it it's a good boy. Thing,
he corrected himself.
I do not,
said the Thing rather more quickly than usual.
I was merely pointing out that this is a very specialised machine and requires skilful control.
Perhaps you shouldn't talk so much, then, said Maskelyne. The Thing rippled its lights at him.
That was nasty, said Gerda.
Well, I've spent a year doing what the Thing's told me, and I've never had so much as a thank you, said Maskelyne. How high are 55,000 feet, anyway?
10 miles, twice as far as the distance from the store to the quarry.
Gerda stopped.
Up, he said. We're that far up?
He looked down at the floor.
Oh,
he said. Now don't you start, said Maskelyne quickly. We've got enough problems with Angelo. Stop holding onto the wall like that. Gerda had gone white.
We must be as high as all those fluffy white cloud things, he breathed.
No,
said the Thing.
That's some comfort then, said Gerda.
They're all a long way below us.
Oh!
Maskelyne grabbed the abbot's arm. Angelo, remember, he said. Gerda nodded slowly and inched his way forward, holding on to things with his eyes closed. We mustn't lose our heads, said Maskelyne, even if we are up so high. He looked down. The metal below him was quite solid. You needed to use imagination to see through it to the ground below. The trouble was that he had a very good imagination. He said, Come on, Gerda, give me your hand.
It's right in front of you.
Sorry, didn't see it with my eyes shut. They spent ages cautiously moving up and down among the wiring, until eventually Gerda said,
It's no good. There isn't a hole big enough to get through. "Then we've got to find a way into the cab and get him out like that," said Masklin. "With all those humans in there? They'll be too busy to notice us. Right, Thing?"
"Right."
"There's a place so far up, there's no down. A little lower, a white dart seared across the top of the sky, outrunning the night, overtaking the sun, crossing in a few hours an ocean that was once the edge of the world." Masklin lowered himself carefully to the floor and crept forward. The humans weren't even looking in his direction. He sidled along towards the open panel where, with any luck, Angelo was hiding. He darted into the blessed shadows. "Angelo," he hissed. After a while, a voice from behind the wiring said, "Who is it?" "How many guesses do you want?" Angelo dropped down.
"They chased me," he said, "and one of them stuck its arm."
"I know. Come on, while they're busy."
"What's happening?"
said Angelo as they hurried out into the light. "The Thing is flying us."
"How? It's got no arms. It can't change gear or anything."
"Apparently, it's being bossy to the computers which do all that.
Come on."
There was a strangled kind of noise. The gnomes looked up. One of the humans was watching them. Its mouth was open, and it was already getting to its feet. Angelo and Masklin looked at one another.
"Run!"
they shouted. Gerda was lurking in a patch of shadow by the door when they came past. He caught up the skirts of his robe and scurried after them.
"What's happening? What's happening?"
"There's a human after us!"
Masklin was just ahead of the other two as they raced up the aisle between the rows of humans, who paid no attention at all to three tiny blurs running between the seats. The floor tilted slightly.
"Thing, what are you doing?"
"Creating a distraction."
Masklin darted between two seats, around a pair of giant shoes, and threw himself flat onto the carpet. The others hurled themselves down behind him. Two huge human feet were a few inches away from them. Masklin pulled the Thing up close to his face.
"Let them have their aeroplane back," he hissed.
"I was hoping to be allowed to land it."
"Let them have it back right now."
There was a faint lurch and a change in the pattern of the lights on the Thing's surface. Masklin breathed out.
"Now, will everyone act sensibly for 5 minutes, he said.